Session number 6042, reel 4.
Mr. Adams, reel 4.
The trucks were generally driven by prisoners of war, including quite a few of my own particular unit. In fact, when in Tamarkan camp, that's the Steel Bridge camp, we had been operating a radio with disastrous consequences for two or three of the operators. Two of my own drivers had, in fact, been carrying the news from Tamarkan to Kinsayo when they were driving these trucks. But the trucks and many of them broke down, and I was moved to work as a blacksmith, in fact, not as a blacksmith, but as a blacksmith striker, which is the man who wields the big hammer as the blacksmith points to where he wants the metal hit, in the repair of these trucks. The bulk of the repairs were the repair of springs, which broke down in the atrocious track that led from Tamarkan to Kinsayo, a total of about 120 kilometres. There were abandoned trucks all over the place. That was a much easier job. It also enabled me and a Sergeant North, who tragically was to die of cholera, to steal from the Japanese workshops enough metal piping, in fact copper piping, from Bedford trucks, captured Bedford trucks, of course, and solder to take back to our POW camp in order to make a still from where distilled water could be made. And the only treatment for cholera in that camp, there were no drugs at all, the only treatment to try and save some of the cholera patients was to give them a saline drip. When we had stolen sufficient materials to make the thing, Sergeant North was a very skilled operator, I asked the Japanese in charge of the camp, that's the workshop camp, if we could borrow one of their soldering irons so that we could make repairs to the cooking equipment, which was a lie, of course, so that the POWs could work better on the railway. And I also asked for permission for Sergeant North to not come to work for one day so that he could stay in camp to mend the cooking equipment. By this time we had stolen enough things. The only other thing I had to ask the Japanese for was some flux, which anyone will know is a necessary part of the soldering operation. So we did, in fact, as a result of working at the workshops, we did, in fact, provide the only form of relief for the cholera patients, the saline drip. Some of the tubing for the apparatus came from a doctor's stethoscope by using the rubber tubing of a doctor's stethoscope for the actual saline drip. But sadly, about 90% of people there who got cholera died from it. And it was a terrible effort, you know, this may sound callous, to get enough dry wood in order to burn the cholera victims. Two of the doctors in the camp, a Dutchman and an Englishman, both themselves got cholera through nursing cholera people. Mercifully, the English doctor survived it after a very grim period. It was very important in our captivity to try and ensure that the doctors survived. Even if they didn't want help, it was important for everyone's sake that the doctors had the maximum chance of survival. Finally, we had never been occupied in actually laying railway lines. We'd only been occupied in making embankments, building bridges of various sorts and sizes, and of making cuttings. But finally, the rail laying gang came past us, and we realised that our time in Kinsayo was limited. The saddest thing that had happened, or that we had seen happen at Kinsayo, was that when later on, after we had left Singapore, the Japanese found that the railway wasn't going to schedule, they had, under completely false pretenses, brought some 7,000 POW from Singapore to Thailand, many of them sick when they left Singapore. They, in fact, were the famous or infamous F Force. And we saw these poor unfortunates staggering by our camp during the course of their almost 300-kilometre march through the monsoon from Ban Pong and Kanchanaburi to Three Pagodas Pass. I saw many of my own comrades, many of my own senior officers, literally stagger by. The Japanese in our camp would not allow them to come into the camp, not that they'd have been any better off in the camp with its swamp and its rats and its lice and its stink and its cholera and its dysentery, but we just thought they'd have been amongst friends. But the Japanese didn't stop us from going out to talk to them. And you must bear in mind, Conrad, that we basically didn't have fences round us. The Japanese were well aware that if anyone did escape, they would not survive escape. And I'm certain one day you'll talk to a friend of mine, Jim Bradley, who'll show you the impossibility of escape, even when you don't get wired in or even a fence in. The Japanese did allow us, however, through our own efforts, to provide these unfortunate people marching this 300 kilometres, they did allow us to provide them with some boiled water. But the thing was, the Japanese only let them march at night. And the impossibility of marching through this tangle of growth at night, it defies description. I fortunately was spared it. But came the day when the Japanese said, "You're all going farther up the railway. The very, very sick are going to be evacuated to the base by barge." Because, don't forget, we were situated right on the banks of the River Kwai Noi. So the very sick were seen away on the barges, some of them to die en route, some of them to die in the base hospitals, some of them to live and be back in England today. I, however, was not in that category. My few weeks in the Japanese workshop, free of the terrible conditions of that cutting, had stoked up my energy a little. But the night before we were due to march out for again an unknown destination, I was sent for at midnight by the Japanese camp commandant, and with great apprehension, I plodded through the floods to his hut, which was quite immaculate, where I was interrogated as to my pre-war occupation of a butcher. And it turned out that I was the nearest thing they'd got to a cattleman. Butchers having associations with cattle. I had been chosen to drive 100 head of cattle from Kinsayo to Conquita. The next morning, the bulk of the camp departed on their march to Conquita. I had been permitted to select 19 men to help drive these cattle through this secondary jungle. Without maps, with one Korean guard as our escort. We collected the cattle, which had had a grueling drive to get there. They had been sold by some Thai dealers to the Japanese army, and most of them were worn-out draft oxen, not in very good condition and rather scrawny. We collected them, 100 cattle, I counted them carefully. It was easy to pick out the tame ones, so we fastened on the few supplies the Japanese had given us for the march, which consisted of some bags of rice and a few dried vegetables and a few dried fish and our cooking pots and pans, a share of which we had acquired from the Japanese. They had also given me two parangs, or machetes, broad-bladed knives, with which to cut our way through any difficult part of the growth. Just as we were setting off, the Japanese engineers blew a lot of rock with explosives, and the noise and the concussion waves from these explosions stampeded our cattle, who disappeared into the bamboo forest surrounding us. The ones who stampeded best and fastest were the ones with our supplies on. We never found them. It took us several hours to round up what remained, and we set off again, rather downhearted, because we had nothing on which to rely for food. We collected wood as we went along, because we were still aware of the fact that to drink water without boiling would certainly, or almost certainly, produce cholera. The march of these cattle, we had no maps. My only instruction from Lieutenant Suzuki had been, you will follow the course of the River Kwai. When you get to Conquita, we shall be there, because I am going by barge, motorized barge, that was, and we shall stop you on the hillside. Then you will be at Conquita. You ought to get there in 10 days or 15 days. We will see you. This 10 days of march, in fact, that's what it turned out to be. Once the first day was over, I had got the gist of what was required of me. I split the 20 men, including myself, and had two men scouting forward, looking for the best way through the trees. Two men on each flank to keep the cattle close together. Another man, a spare man with the two chaps in front, both of whom were NCOs, Corporal Robinson of the Cambridgeshires and Corporal Lawrence of the Norfolks. Corporal Lawrence, in fact, was a veteran of the Spanish Civil War, where he'd been a lieutenant in General Franco's army. The extra man was so that they could send word back to me if we came to an impassable or too difficult point, at which stage I would have the drive stopped while I went forward and hoped to satisfy it. Bringing up the rear were spare men, two men carrying cooking utensils, two men picking up wood for when we stopped and wanted water, and after the second day, one man, Sergeant North, had to carry our guard's rifle. Our guard, a Korean, lower than Private Takeda, was very hostile for the first day. But when we got away from all Japanese, he probably felt vulnerable, cut off in a jungle with 20 hostiles, rather like a cowboy surrounded by Indians. And he became more amenable and really left things to me. And he normally was walking along very casually, anything up to half a mile behind the herd. He was very useful to us because when we got near a Japanese camp, and if we wanted anything, or even to a prisoner of war camp, he would go in and ask for it. On several occasions, I saw him manhandled by a Japanese NCO for asking for things that the camp didn't have, because the Japanese were not averse to hitting anyone in their own army if they didn't perform the way that the NCO or the officer thought they should perform. We had great cattle casualties, some just collapsed through weakness. The first one we had, amongst the 100 cattle, had been a cow with a calf, a very young calf. The bulk of the animals were bullocks, you know, castrated males. And they are what are best for draft oxen. But there were about 5 cows. One of them had this calf, and after the first day, in all the mud, which had sucked everyone's boots off, rather like those descriptions of the trenches at Passchendaele, and those of us who had boots were carrying them slung round our necks for a brighter day, we tried carrying this calf slung round our necks, but it became too much of an effort, so we abandoned the cow and her calf at a little leafy glade we passed, and I often wondered what happened to them. At a place called Kwima, where we stopped one night, which was a small Japanese camp, we were very thirsty indeed. And I was very relieved when one of my own unit privates turned up, driver John Isaacs. It turned out he was a servant to the Japanese in this camp. It wasn't a POW camp, it was a Japanese engineers camp. And he asked me if we would like something to eat and drink. Of course, it was manna from heaven. It was pouring with rain. The Japanese wouldn't let us get near their camp. And there was a small stream separating us, one of the tributaries of the Kwai, of which there were many. I was awakened the next... We had to, of course, man guards on these cattle to stop other prisoners or other Japanese from stealing them and to stop them wandering off. So we built a big fire, and fire does attract cattle. Not too near, but fairly near. And we went to sleep under part of a tent. It wasn't big enough for 20, but by crowding and overlapping, one could just about get in. And because I might be called in the night, I slipped on the edge, and I was awakened the next morning by one of our cattle urinating over me, because the cattle had moved nearer and nearer to our tent in the night, because we'd got a little bonfire in front of the tent. We were off away the next morning, and there are so many incidents that it would take up too much of your tape to describe them. Quite unique experiences in many ways. Suffices it to say that during these days we lost many of our cattlemen. None of them actually died on us, but we had broken legs through slipping, malaria, fever and things, and we either would carry them back or carry them forward with us and ask the nearest POW camp if they'd admit them. Sometimes a camp would not admit them, because they have the fear of cholera. My great friend, Sergeant North, the one who had helped make the cholera still at Kinsayo, he disobeyed orders and drank water out of a stream. The following day, he told me he got stomach cramps, and that was the warning that cholera was about. We left him at the next camp. With great reluctance did the camp accept him. And a few months later we heard that Sergeant North had died. A Dutchman with my cattlemen, Private De Bruin, also contracted cholera. He had to be left behind in another camp. And miracle of miracles, 2 months later he had recovered from the disease and had been sent back to our new camp at Kankwita, where, naturally, now being immune from cholera, he became the cholera hospital nurse, and where he displayed great diligence and skill in nursing other victims of the disease from which he had recovered. The incidents of this particular camp I have given, of this particular drive, I should correct myself, I have given in some detail in my book, No Time for Geishas. There are so many daily incidents. Bear in mind we were walking from dawn till dusk. We always reckoned to get the cattle down and ourselves down before darkness set in. We were welcomed at some camps. Some camps tried to distract us whilst they stole some of our cattle. And at one particular place, our scouts sent the word back to me that there were some cattle ahead of us. It turned out there were some cattle who'd been driven up in the dry season by the tires, and they were part of the stores of a Japanese camp, not a POW camp. We stopped. I sent the scouts out. They couldn't find any Japanese in sight. Our own Korean Takeda was a quarter of a mile or so behind us. To this point, we had lost approximately 40 of our 100 cattle. I decided to drive our cattle through the new herd of cattle in order to recruit replacements. With a minimum of noise, we drove them, and in fact, some of our weakened cattle stayed with the new herd, and fortunately, some of the stronger cattle of the herd that we had rustled joined us. When we left the camp, that particular Japanese camp, fortunately unknown to the Japanese there and unknown to our Korean at the time, we had We stopped some way along the track, and we found we were back up to 76 cattle. We had recruited quite a few replacements for our lost animals. By this time, I was down to 6 cattlemen out of the original 20. And we came to a camp called Brancassi, which was Australian camp, and I found there the marching contingent from Kinsayo, my own lot. I tried to recruit more cattlemen and was partially successful. I got back up to 14, but none of the prisoners were very keen on joining us because you were not only marching with your worldly goods, but you were having to drive these very weakened cattle.
Did the Japanese allow you to do that? Did the Japanese allow you to make those recruits?
Oh, yes. Don't forget, they were from men of our own camp. They were the men from Kinsayo who we were going to take the cattle for. We just joined up with them for the night. I did try and get an officer to take my place for one day, but the only one who volunteered out of about 25 officers was in far too weakened a condition to help me. He is now a very successful solicitor in Derby, and I hear from him from time to time. When I got to Brancassi, I personally made my report and then passed out. And as we had got there long after the marching, the bulk of the camp had gone so much ahead of us, there was no accommodation for us, and we slept in a little drainage ditch outside the hut and got completely soaked in the night. However, the Australians in the camp, many of whom were to go with me to Japan a year later, they looked after us very well, providing us with ample drinking water and gave us food. And when we left the following morning, apart from the fact they stole one of our cattle, they also gave us some cooked rice to eat on the way and some dry firewood and things to carry with us for the day's march. And Staff Sergeant Durkin, who was the senior NCO in that camp, Eddie Durkin, I met him later on in Thailand, and as I said later on, he was to be an inmate of Camp 17 in Japan with me, a very stout chap. A regular army Australian soldier. There weren't many regular army soldiers of the Australian army. We came to Kat Takanun, which was about the halfway point of our march, and I asked the Japanese, the camp which we passed, if we could stop the night there. And they indicated that we could stop the night there and spend the whole of the next day there and the following night if we'd give them a bit of one of our cattle. They wanted a bit of beef because they had no cattle themselves. It so happened that although it was the wet season, there was a temporary dry spell. We had just lost 4 cattle over a cliff, and the Japanese lending me some hurricane lamps, with half of the cattlemen, we went back, salvaged some of the meat from the cattle that had fallen over the cliff by lowering ourselves with ropes over the cliff. The Japanese gave some of the meat to the Japanese inmates of this camp, who had nothing to do with prisoners at all. It was, in fact, a staging camp for Japanese reinforcements for the Burma front. So they had nothing to do with prisoners, nothing to do with the railway. They were just providing a staging camp, but it was empty at the time. They wouldn't let us stop in the huts because of the fear of cholera, but they gave us a tent to pitch in the middle of the parade ground. And we had a very pleasant 24 hours there, where we got cleaned, very fully rested. And when we left, the Japanese sergeant in charge of this camp gave us 1 or 2 tins of milk, condensed milk, and some tea and some sugar. Of course, they had had this meat from us. Not that we any prisoner lost by them having the meat, because the 4 cattle who had died on the cliff would be wasted anyway. The only people that would have benefited from them would be the vultures, because vultures abound in Thailand, in that part of Thailand anyway. And anything dead that falls by the wayside, be it human or animal, the vultures are the great scavengers and dustbin men of the area. All good things had to come to an end, and on the second morning after arriving at Takanoon, which historically is at the 217-kilometre point on the chart of the Thailand-Burma Railway, we set off again. The rain had started, and Takanoon is very high. And from the peak, we were really almost at the top of a mountain. And as I looked down towards the valley of the Kwai far below us, the tops of teak trees looked rather like an English bowling green, so smooth, in the half-cloudy atmosphere. Of course, it was not an English bowling green. It was teak, which are 150 to 200 feet high in places. It was possible to admire the beauty of the landscape. We didn't always see any traces of the railway that was being built, probably because we weren't following the tracks that the prisoners of war building it had followed. And it was always comforting to occasionally see the River Kwai and know that we weren't going somewhere where we'd have become lost. We were always lost, but not truthfully. On one or two occasions we came to blank ends where the scouts would have led us to a tributary of the River Kwai, which was too wide for us to cross. If it wasn't too wide and not too swift, because the rivers get very swift in the wet season, whereas they sometimes dry up completely in the dry season, we would swim the cattle across it. But it wasn't always possible. So we would then have to backtrack and go back and find a new way round. When you consider that the distance from Kinsayo to Conquita by rail, when the railway was finished, was only approximately 100 kilometres, but that was more or less as the crow flies. I estimated, by thinking about this, that we probably covered something over 200 kilometres in our 10 days' march, driving and pushing these cattle along. On another day, as we approached the camp of Cree and Cry, where there were a lot of 18th Division RESC, but they again were not allowed to have us in camp because of the fear of cholera, one of the cattle pushed me into a tributary. And I'd got my pack on, of course, which was very heavy with water, and I sank to the bottom, and but for the prompt action of some of the cattlemen who pulled me out, one of them in particular, who was a very fine swimmer, he kept